This is HPR episode 1859 entitled, A Mouse in a Maze on the Raspberry Pi, and is part of the series, Programming 101. It is hosted by Gabriel Evenfire, and is about 40 minutes long. The summary is, this podcast describes a little game that I learned in my first programming class.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, Hacker Public Radio. This is Gabriel Evenfire, and I'm recording another podcast in our series on bare metal programming for the Raspberry Pi. It's been a while since my last podcast, and truthfully, the material for this podcast was done last fall, but I hadn't gotten a chance to getting around to recording a podcast about it. It was meant to just be a little quickie as something fun to do before I delve into some other topics like the sound driver or the floating point coprocessor or the graphics driver or something like that. But I haven't taken the time to learn those yet. It's been a busy year, so instead this is just something fun that I threw together on the side. What I created was a little game that was a project I was given way back when I was in my very first programming class. And the notion of this game is to create a little maze and have a mouse run through the maze trying to find a piece of cheese within it. The idea would be for the maze to be randomly generated and the mouse's starting position and the cheese to be also randomly selected. So you have to give the mouse some sort of intelligence to be able to eventually find the cheese, or it can go on for quite some time. The way that one approaches this game on the Raspberry Pi without any sort of graphics or sound is to treat the VT100 terminal that one can connect to the Raspberry Pi over the serial console as your graphics terminal, as your graphical display for this little game. So it ends up being a little text-based game instead of something more significant or fancy. In order to run my version of this game, you will need to have the latest copy of my Raspberry Pi libraries, which include an application named Mouse Zero in it. I won't rehash in this podcast all of the steps to getting that up and running, but I will put them in the show notes for reference. Essentially, if you haven't done this before, you can go back to the previous podcasts to see how to set up this bare metal programming environment. You'll need an ARM compiler, and you'll need a Raspberry Pi, and you'll need a serial to TTL cable. And once you have those up and running and use the loader program that we developed in the earlier series to enable us to load programs without having to reflash them to our SD card every time. Then you open up the loader and tell it to receive a file via X modem, and then you point it to the file mouse0.bin, which one generates in the apps/mouse0 directory just by typing make. And when you give it that file over the X modem protocol, and it downloads, and you tell it to run by pressing the S key for start, then what you will see is a little 20 by 40 maze pop up drawn in hashes, and a little mouse that is in this maze, and he starts running through the maze and dropping breadcrumbs behind him as he searches for a piece of cheese. The mouse is a percent symbol, and the cheese is a V for a sort of like a wedge of Swiss cheese, something like that. And you'll see he goes in a particular pattern if you watch him, trying to avoid places that he's already been to, at least in my version of the game, which is the simplest version that I developed based on the algorithm, the search algorithm that I first was provided with when I learned to program OSA many years ago. And so this mouse keeps wandering around, keeps dropping breadcrumbs, more and more breadcrumbs, trying to find his way through the maze. And if he gets the cheese, then you'll see him become a very happy mouse, and the game stops. You'll also see I added another element that wasn't in the original program idea, the original project idea that I was given, where it has a little down counter. The mouse has a certain amount of energy, and if he doesn't find the cheese within a certain number of moves, then the counter reaches zero and he starves to death. And then after this program has reached a point where the mouse has either found the cheese or starved to death, it will let you press any key to generate a new maze, new mouse, and start off running again. So that's what you can expect when you run this little mouse in a maze program. So I want to talk about a couple of things in this podcast. First, what the general framework of the game is, and how I implemented it on the Pi. And second of all, why I think this is a really great little game for novice programmers. Starting with the implementation, this program uses the libraries for bare metal programming that I walked through the creation of in the previous three episodes, including my embedded libraries that I've been working on for many more years, the CAT libraries, which I got to work with the aforementioned Raspberry Pi libraries. And that was in episode 3 that I discussed how to actually get those libraries working in there. The game essentially is going to use very, very little from those CAT libraries, maybe a little string manipulation. Most of the logic for this is actually in the game itself. I think the whole program is less than 300 lines. It uses VT100 command control sequences to move the cursor to different positions in the VT100 terminal. And I looked these up on Google, and you can find them embedded in the code, and I'll also put links to where you can find VT100 escape sequences. But the only ones I really use essentially are the command to clear the screen and the command sequences to go to a particular XY position or row column position, depending on how you want to think of it, in the terminal. That's basically all you need to do as far as All you need to expect out of the terminal for a very basic version of this game. So when I go to draw, say, the mouse and move him to a new position, then I will issue the go-to sequence of commands. That is, I will send a certain sequence of characters over the serial line that the VT100 terminal will say, oh, that's not a character you want me to draw. You want me to change the position of the cursor. And it will read that command and move the cursor to that position. And then I will draw the character for the mouse. Well, I think I misspoke earlier when I said the mouse was a percent. I think it's actually an at. So the mouse has a little tail that circles around it, I suppose. Okay, so moving on. So that's how we actually take a text-based terminal, a simple dumb text-based terminal, and well, not quite so dumb, and turn it into a platform that we can draw things on. Of course, all we can draw are characters, you know, regular text characters. But yeah, that's good enough for a little mouse and a maze. Okay. As far as what the Raspberry Pi itself is providing, it's really just the computation, the running of the game, and the serial I/O to and from the terminal. So we already talked in earlier episodes about how to use the serial interface to send and receive characters, and those same routines that were discussed in first and second episodes are used here. Okay, so now let's talk about the algorithm for the game itself. I decided I would assume, for my purposes, that we were working within a sort of a standard VT100 environment, which has, you know, 80 columns by 25-ish rows. So I decided, okay, I'll make my maze 20 cells top to bottom by 40 cells left to right. And then I'll have a little status line that'll take up the 21st row of characters that will, say, print out the current amount of energy that the mouse has left and its current X and Y position and that sort of thing. In order to do this, we just have a simple static array of characters to contain the maze. And it's got, again, 20 rows by 40 columns. It's just a simple 20 by 40 matrix of characters, okay? And we initialize it with all spaces, so it's completely empty, so to speak. There is no maze. So then the next thing that we do is we first put our border around the maze. We want the outermost walls to be impregnable, so the mouse can't, say, run off the top of the screen or the left of the screen in this case. So we make the leftmost column, the rightmost column, the topmost row, and the bottommost row of this maze be walls. And I, again, selected the hash symbol or the pound symbol as the designator for the wall. So, okay, now we have a big empty room for the mouse to be in. Now we have to actually generate the maze itself. So for this part, I wanted this maze to be randomly generated because that was the original specification that I was given way, way back when. So I needed a random number generator. And to do this, what I did was I went in to my catlib embedded libraries and I dug out the incredibly simple RC4 encryption algorithm. RC4, you can write the entire thing in about 20 lines of code, which is one of the reasons I'm sure that it's so widely used. And it keeps a state of about, if I remember correctly, 256 bytes of state for its own internal processing. So all I did was I grabbed from the Raspberry Pi the current system time and used that as a seed, we'll say a key, for the RC4 stream cipher. And then I just started using that RC4 cipher to generate a stream of random bytes. Because the way RC4 works, being a stream cipher, it just generates random bytes that you are then supposed to XOR with your plain text stream in order to produce the ciphertext stream. I'm not actually interested in producing a cipher stream or encrypting anything. I just want the pseudo-random data that the stream will produce. Okay, so from this, so essentially, every time I want to get a random integer, I just have the RC4 cipher generate the next four random bytes and put it into an unsigned integer, 32-bit integer, and that's my random integer. And if I need it to be within a certain range, of course, I do the old trick of taking that number modulo the width of the range and adding the base of the range. Okay. Now, the point is that I want to start putting walls at random positions within my big empty room. So I'm going to be calling this random function over and over again to get an X and a Y coordinate for a new wall. And then what I do is I get that X and Y coordinate, or row and column again, depending on how you want to look at it. And I check to see, is there already a wall there? If there is, then I try again, and then I try again, until I find an empty space where I can drop a new wall. Now, how many walls you put down becomes a little bit of an interesting issue. Because if you put too many down, you can actually have a maze that nobody can get out of. It'll have entire large sections of it blocked off, and there's no way to get through it. If you have too few, then you don't have much of a maze at all. You just have a big empty room with a bunch of, say, pillars in it that you just have to walk around. So I made a compile time parameter to the program saying, okay, what percentage of the empty spaces will have walls? And I think I set it to 20 or 30, something like that. But I played around with it, was the point. And then that's how many walls I ended up dropping into the maze at random before I said, okay, this is my maze. So, okay, so now we have a big matrix of characters where we have walls down the left, right, top, and bottom of this big array of characters, and a smattering of wall blocks throughout the middle, and the rest is still empty spaces. Okay, so next step is you select a random XY position for your mouse. Okay, and that's where you're going to put your mouse. And again, you follow the same sort of technique where you generate a random XY, you see, make sure there's no wall there, and you keep doing that until you find a spot that has that is empty, and that's where you drop the mouse. And then the same thing with the cheese. You find a random spot and drop the cheese in there. Okay, that's how we initialize the maze. Now we actually have to get to the how do we play the game? How do we get to the main loop of playing the game? What we're going to do is we're going to have the game move in ticks. It's going to enter a loop where it checks to see, okay, has the mouse found the cheese or is it out of energy? And if it's not, then we will execute one more tick of the game, where a tick is defined as something as a bunch of things happen. And the bunch of things happening are going to be the mouse will drop a breadcrumb for the space that it's currently in so that it knows to try to avoid that space in the future. And then it's going to pick the next space that it can move into. And then it's going to move into that space. And then we're going to check to make sure to check to see whether we have found the cheese or not. And if we haven't found the cheese, we decrement the mouse's energy by one. And then, after that, we want the game to sleep for a little bit. We want it not to do anything for a little bit, because you see, this Raspberry Pi will go execute this mouse running through this maze far, far, far faster than would be interesting to watch. it'll probably be bottlenecked at waiting to draw the mouse by the VT100 terminal, by the serial connection. I mean, the serial connection can only run at, 112 kilobits a second. And so it'll probably be spending its, if you let it run flat out, it'll be limited by that communication with over your serial line. The point is, it's still not fun to watch. The whole thing will be over before it even starts. So you actually want then the system to quote unquote sleep for a certain amount of time before executing the next tick in the game. Or the way I handle that in the Raspberry Pi is actually before I start the tick, I grab the current system time. And then I add a certain amount of delay, which is the number of system time ticks I want to elapse between game time ticks. So in other words, I say, okay, I want there to be, 1,000 cycles between every game tick, 1,000 ARM cycles between every game tick. Okay, I don't remember the value I used offhand. It was something I had to play. I played around with, trying to find something that looked pleasing to me when I was running the game. Adjusted it up and down. A little trial and error here and there until I found something that looked good. I started off by, just using the fact that the ARM is running at, 700-800 megahertz, and how many game ticks do I want per second? Maybe one every half second, one every fifth of a second, and that gives you a good ballpark to start at. But anyways, so that's the point, is after you execute the code to carry out the mouse movement, you just sit in a tight loop, spinning and watching the ARM's system clock until that system clock gets to the next system time, at which point you want to start the next tick. So if, let's say, I think 1,000 is probably low, but let's just say I said, okay, I want 1,000 cycles of delay between each tick, between each game tick. So I grab the system time, and then I wait for the system time to be greater than the previous system time plus 1,000. Okay. And we just do this forever in a nice little tight loop. Because, you see, again, we're in bare metal programming mode. We don't have a nice little sleep function that you would find in a traditional operating system. The concept of sleep is actually meaningless, right? When we send our programs to sleep in a Unix environment, what we're really saying is, okay, I want you to signal me after a certain amount of time, but put my process to sleep and let some other program run. Well, when you're bare metal programming, there is no other program to run. There's nothing else to swap out and do. So instead, you do what most instructors will tell you in your first programming course is a terrible idea, and you just pull. You just pull over and over and over again on the timer until it's time to start the next iteration. Okay, so we have our game loop explained, right? Our game loop is going to, again, until the current game is finished, meaning the mouse has starved or the mouse has found the cheese, we drop our breadcrumbs, we figure out where the mouse is going to move next, we draw the changes in the maze, meaning we erase the mouse from the current position and replace it with a breadcrumb, and then draw the mouse at its new position, and then we go to sleep until the next time to run a game tick. And I say we go to sleep, meaning actually what we do is we spin again in a tight loop until that time arrives. Okay, so that explains the game loop itself. Now let's talk about how does the mouse actually find the cheese. And I've been talking a bit about breadcrumbs. Okay, the search algorithm, I would say, and I would recommend, is sort of your first iteration, your first order search algorithm for finding your way through the maze should look something like this. Okay, the mouse will tend to will tend to go up and then first, and if it can't go up, it will go left, and if it can't go left, it will go down, and if it can't go down, it will go right. Okay. Now, if you just followed this just as I said it, your mouse will find its way up into a corner somewhere up and to the left of it, and will sit there forever eventually, or just bounce around in that corner once it gets up near there. So the mouse is going to follow a very systematic pattern, preferring up and then left and then down and then right, as far as its movements go. But it's going to try to avoid spaces that it has seen before. To do this, as I indicated, offhand before, it's dropping breadcrumbs. And what do I mean by that? It means that I have the array that represents the maze, and then the array of characters, and then I have another array that represents a count of the number of breadcrumbs in each space in the maze. Okay, so when the mouse goes to decide which direction it's going to go, the first thing it does is it looks at all of the breadcrumbs for the spaces around it. And it only picks from spaces that have the least amount of breadcrumbs. So initially, of course, there are going to be zero breadcrumbs throughout the maze in any given space. But eventually, after it's run around for a while, it will have left breadcrumbs on all sorts of spaces. So essentially, it's going to first say, okay, how many breadcrumbs are above me, to the left of me, below me, and to the right? And whichever of those spaces has the least amount of breadcrumbs, that's the direction I'm going to go. That's the space I'm going to move into. Okay? Oh, and by the way, I'm going to drop a breadcrumb in the space I'm in before I move. So if there's a tie between a couple of spaces, say both up and down have less breadcrumbs than left and right, but they have the same number of breadcrumbs compared to each other, then it will prefer up over down. As I said, it'll prefer up first and then left next and then down and then right. Okay. Okay. So our kind of exhaustive search algorithm really looks like this. First, find out which direction has the least breadcrumbs, and then of those directions, the ones that have the least breadcrumbs, pick up first, and if up isn't available, then left, and if left isn't available, then down, and if down isn't available, then right. Now, of course, the logic has to be a little bit more sophisticated than that, because it also has to know that you can't move up into a wall, right? So it can't just be looking at breadcrumbs. It also has to say, well, can I move into a wall? So the way I did this in my version of the game was, again, so I have this hidden array that is the same size and dimensions as the maze, that contains the number of breadcrumbs in every space. And every time the mouse moves, again, you could say every element of this array is just an array of a count of the number of breadcrumbs. Every element in this array initially starts at zero, except all of the spaces that have walls. I treat the walls, from the mouse's perspective, as a huge mound of breadcrumbs, an infinite amount of breadcrumbs. So the maximum integer value is placed in each of the spaces that also has a wall. Okay, and I populate this, you can say, breadcrumb matrix with these infinite counts of breadcrumbs while I'm generating the maze and dropping the wall into the walls down to create the maze. Okay. So now, anytime the mouse is selecting a direction to move, a wall will just seem like an enormous amount of breadcrumbs, and therefore it will never pick that direction. And it will just keep moving and moving and moving around the walls and picking other spaces, even if they have 10, 20, 100 breadcrumbs in them. That is actually the essential algorithm for the basic outline of the game. Just to briefly make the game a little more visually interesting, I added a little bit of a twist on the mouse moving. When I want the mouse to move, if you weren't dropping breadcrumbs, the way you would move the mouse on the VT100 display would be, you know the mouse's current position, you go to that position using the VT100 go-to character sequence to set the cursor there, and then you draw a space to indicate that now it's an empty space, and then you go to the mouse's new position and you write a mouse character because now the mouse is there. Okay, that's how you move the mouse. One of the things that I added just to make it more interesting and give you an idea of what the mouse is thinking was that I started drawing the breadcrumbs in the maze. So initially the maze consisted of all empty spaces, walls, mouse, and cheese. But what I started doing is as the mouse, whenever the mouse left the space, a current space to move into a new one, I would check to see how many breadcrumbs were there. And instead of just drawing an empty space in where the place that the mouse was leaving, I would draw a character representing the breadcrumbs. And so I started with a period, if there were only a few breadcrumbs, say 1, 2, or 3, to indicate there's just that he's been there, but not very much. And then if there were 4, 5, or 6 breadcrumbs, I instead drew a plus. And then 7, 8, or 9, I think I drew an X. And eventually, once it got beyond a certain point, it drew these zeros, meaning, you know, there are mounds and mounds of breadcrumbs in these spots. It helps you see, as the mouse is going through the maze, where it has visited and why it is going to go in certain directions instead of other directions. This is easy enough to remove. You can, in the game, and instead just overwrite that position with an empty space. And then the mouse will, you'll see it moving through what looks like a systematic pattern, but you won't exactly understand why it's going where it's going. That is our Mouse in a Maze game, in a nutshell. This is more or less the original form that was described to us and we were told to program in my very first programming course. It was rather fun. I think the dropping the breadcrumbs or printing out the different breadcrumbs was a little bit different. I don't think that part was there, and I think the mouse dying of starvation was something else we added. And that brings me to what I really like about this game as a concept for intro programmers. There are tons of variations that one can then take this program after you've gotten the basics of it running, and tons of variations you can make on it to make it more interesting. So just wanted to share some thoughts on what those can be. First of all, of course, you have the mouse is fairly dumb, right? It is just working in a systematic pattern, winding its way through the maze and ultimately, hopefully, finding the cheese. So you can try to create a much more interesting search algorithm. Maybe the mouse is able to find the cheese if he's within a few squares of it and he can get right to it. Maybe the mouse is able to look more than one space up, down, left, right from where he currently is. Maybe he's able to look 2 or 3 spaces outside of that range and pick what is the, you know, what is sort of a more optimal path based not only on what's immediately around him, but also what is perhaps a little bit further out. Maybe there's a bunch of empty space further around. Maybe the mouse has this interesting sense of smell, and he kind of knows where the cheese generally is, and so he aims for it. In other words, he tends to prefer heading toward the direction of the cheese instead of just going at random. Okay. So as you can see, there are lots of ways that you can, you know, change how the mouse moves around. Another thing that you can change is the structure of the maze itself, right? I just drew it with a bunch of hashtags, but you could imagine that you could, instead of just drawing a bunch of blocks, if you had a bunch of walls that happened to line up vertically, maybe you instead of drawing them as hashtags, you draw them as vertical bars. And if you have some walls that are attached diagonally, maybe you represent them with a forward slash or a backslash, depending on the direction of the diagonal, or an X if there are two diagonals that come to meet, or a V or a caret. You know, you can make your maze a little bit more sophisticated and interesting in terms of how it gets drawn. You could have the game run on and keep going. Well, once the mouse finds the cheese, then maybe it gets a boost to its energy, and from there it has to search out a new piece of cheese that you then randomly drop into place. Or maybe you start by putting several cheeses into the maze, and the mouse has to try and find them all before it croaks. That would be another possibility. But again, it gets that boost of energy every time it receives them before it dies. Maybe you could put a cat or two in the maze, and these cats might move around in random directions, and if they can spot the mouse, they start giving chase, and will eat it if they catch it. Maybe instead of having the mouse move randomly, you put the cats in and the cats move. But maybe instead of having the mouse move randomly, maybe you have the mouse move based on input of input from the keyboard. So you're constantly checking for key presses, and if you see a key press, then the mouse will respond and move in that direction. So, you know, you could use the standard WASD, or you could use the arrow keys. You look up the arrow key representation that you get for a VT100 terminal, and if you see that arrow key, then you use that. But the point is, maybe you respond to input. Maybe if you were doing something like that, whenever somebody tried to make an illegal move, say bumping into a wall, you echo the character for a beep, so that the thing beeps and says, nope, boom, boom, you can't go into that wall. You could have the mouse itself have a different symbol based on what direction it's moving in, just to make it look a little more interesting. So it becomes, instead of just a static sprite, it becomes sort of a changing sprite as it moves around in the maze. It's a wonderful introductory program. It's more than, you know, a base Hello World program. It's more than, say, a 20 or 30 line little program that you'd give for, you know, somebody who barely understands ifs and loops. But once somebody understands ifs and loops and arrays, if you give them the basic algorithm, it's something that they can code up and then let their imaginations really, really run with. And I really loved that. And the people in my class, in my programming class, when we took this, we created all sorts of different ideas and variations, and then we posted them and swapped them, and, you know, and, oh, I like that idea, I'm going to try this, and, oh, I want to try, oh, I want to, oh, that's a great idea, I've got to do better than that. So, you know, it's just a very, very good little exercise in that. So it was a fun thing to code up over a Thanksgiving break, which is exactly what happened. I was visiting in-laws, and you know, spent a few hours and drew it back up. Probably most of that time spent looking up the VT100 terminal characters at the time. But, you know, so it was a fun little exercise, but it was enjoyable, and it was a great trip down memory lane. But I still, even coming back, I've done many, seen many introduction to programming through gaming sorts of exercises. And maybe I'm biased just because of the nostalgia factor, but I have to say, this one in particular, this idea, seems to be among the best. There's nothing that really ties this to the Raspberry Pi or a text-based implementation. The only difference for, say, when one's programming this in JavaScript, or one's programming this in Java, or on in GTK, or WX Windows, or whatever, the only thing that changes is how you display the maze, how you draw the maze, and how you move the mouse. This just shows you again that sometimes the simple things in programming are the most enjoyable. So to wrap up, I hope you have found this a little bit interesting. You know, the Raspberry Pi has much more powerful capabilities than drawing mice in text-based little games. But, you know, when you're bare metal programming, sometimes just creating little simple little things like this is fun. And so I invite you to use your imagination. Think of what else you can do in this kind of very, very constrained bare bones environment. What can you dig up with your imagination? What can you create? And you know, I'd be very interested too, if you want to comment on this, you know, to just or email me to you know, describe some of the interesting games that you, or the games or projects that, or exercises that you were given, you know, as or you have learned as a programmer, that really open up your imagination and invite you to experiment and play and hack. So, with that note, this is Gabriel Evenfire signing off.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.